are grooving back here at the Bryant Park Project from NPR News.
Wednesday morning dance party.
Totally.
All right.
We are everywhere. Digital, FM, Sirius, satellite radio, online, of course, at npr.org/Bryant Park. I'm Rachel Martin with my boogieing partner,
Allison Stewart. Good thing the cameras aren't on this morning, is all I have to say. Coming up, The Secret of Treasure Hunters, a story in this week's New Yorker magazine, examines the underhanded techniques used by modern-day treasure hunters. But first, let's get some news headlines.
This is NPR.
Thanks, Allison. Ireland's prime minister is stepping down amid allegations of corruption. Bertie Ahern denies doing anything wrong. He says he's only leaving his post so his government can focus on running the country. The prime minister is facing questions about payments he received from friends and businessmen while serving as finance minister during the 1990s. Ahern is one of Europe's longest-serving heads of state and has spent almost 11 years as premier. 3 days after Zimbabwe's presidential election, there are still no official results. Both the government and the opposition have denied that they're in discussions about the possibility that President Robert Mugabe will step aside. With more, here's NPR's Ophelia Quist-Arkton.
The reports from Zimbabwe said political leaders, security chiefs, and mediators were in talks about a possible deal after Saturday's presidential and parliamentary vote. Journalists were told the discussions centered on the possibility of President Robert Mugabe stepping down. But there's been a flat denial from both the government and the main opposition Movement for Democratic Change, which says it has won the presidential election. Zimbabwe's veteran leader is facing the stiffest challenge to his 28 years in power, amid accusations that he has destroyed the economy and impoverished his once prosperous nation.
NPR's Ophelia Quist-Arkton reporting. And back here closer to home, 30,000 families still live in travel trailers along the Gulf Coast, and FEMA wants them out before the hot weather ensues. Hurricanes are possible, but the immediate danger is formaldehyde. On Capitol Hill yesterday, lawmakers learned that warning could have come earlier. Here's NPR's Noah Adams.
About a year ago, FEMA was advising people to open trailer windows to clear out the fumes. FEMA in February had received a formaldehyde report from an agency of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. It did not address long-term health threats, including cancer, and one agency scientist started firing off corrective emails. But spring and summer went by before a fix was made. Dr. Howard Frumkin, the agency's director, said he and his staff should have been more aggressive.
Our February 2007 report on formaldehyde in unoccupied trailers was narrowly focused, used an inappropriate level of concern, and did not deliver a sufficiently clear and complete public health message.
A follow-up advisory was sent in March to a FEMA lawyer who put it out of sight in a file drawer.
NPR's Noah Adams reporting. And retiring NASA's space shuttle could result in the loss of over 8,000 jobs at NASA. The biggest cuts will be at the Kennedy Space Center at Cape Canaveral, Florida, and at an assembly facility in New Orleans, which makes external fuel tanks for the shuttle. NASA is transitioning its shuttle program to a new generation of spacecraft and rockets called the Constellation Program. And in sports, the Yankees did not disappoint in their final season opener at Yankee Stadium last night. They beat the Toronto Blue Jays 3-2. Pitcher Chenmin Wong shut down the Blue Jays for 7 innings, and Melky Cabrera helped out with a homer in the 6th. The team is set to move into its new home next year, a $1.3 billion ballpark next door. But last night, it was all about tradition. Reggie Jackson was escorted to the mound by fellow Hall of Famer Yogi Berra to throw out the ceremonial first pitch. That's the news. It's always online at npr.org.
This is NPR.
Treasure hunting used to be different back in the day. You used to need an eye patch and a map with a big X on it. You said all your R's like a pirate, like Argyle sucks. And Goonies never said die. Things were simple.
Then, yes. Nowadays, you use underwater robots to search shipwrecks. Then you remain extremely secretive about what you find, telling the media that it's worth millions of dollars, but not telling anyone where it is or what country you think the treasure's from. Then you end up in a dispute with a country that says it's their ship you found and their treasure.
That's the story one treasure company is having anyway. Odyssey Marine Exploration. Last May, it announced it had found a ship called the Black Swan with millions of dollars in treasure on board. But Spain says it's one of its old warships and the booty belongs to Spain. In January, a court ordered Odyssey to reveal the wreck's location and share info about the artifacts it found. Share it with two Spain. Ownership of coins already pulled from the wreck. Still in dispute.
The Black Swan is the latest, but by no means the first controversy for Odyssey. It's headed up by John Morris and Greg Stem. John Colapinto wrote about Odyssey for The New Yorker this week, and he joined us yesterday in our studio to tell us the Odyssey of Odyssey. Who are the modern day treasure hunters? Who are these people?
Well, you know, the modern day ones are guys like Greg Stem and John Morris that are kind of corporate, like they're super corporatized guys with, you know, logos on their shirts that say Odyssey Marine Exploration and kind of bland offices that could be an insurance company. And they're very, you know, and they talk the lingo of Wall Street and they're in, you know, with hedge fund managers and it's all very, and they, you know, have these huge multi-million dollar deep sea robots. So it's all very corporatized. It's a business now.
What are, if you don't mind kind of explaining some of the cloak and dagger details of the Sussex story, this was something that you were very heavily involved in the research and investigating. Describe to us how you pursued this story.
There was this extraordinary find called the HMS Sussex, and it was a British warship that went down with reportedly 1 million pounds sterling on it. And Odyssey told these wonderful stories about this bribe that was being paid to the Duke of Savoy, who was in the south of France. Odyssey said they learned that the Sussex was sailing out to bring this bribe and that they hit a storm and sank. Now, the skepticism didn't originate with me. There were some online people, this website called historyhuntersinternational.org, got kind of interested and then increasingly suspicious about this fabulous tale of the bribe being brought by the Sussex. And these fellows were kind of smart about history and they knew how to search the records in the British Library online for whether or not the Exchequer had actually ever cleared a payment of that size and whether or not it was put on the Sussex. And lo and behold, there was no paper trail for that. And in fact, the paper trail that Odyssey cited looked increasingly thin if you really looked at it closely. And it has to be said, really, that, you know, the Times said that there was possibly up to $4 billion worth of treasure. And of course, that got repeated around the world in the echo chamber of the media and internet. So all of a sudden, it becomes an established fact that there's $4 billion worth of treasure that Odyssey is going to be bringing up. Now, it goes out there, and Odyssey really benefits from those figures being named. And, I mean, obviously, there's now some doubt as to whether or not it even is the Sussex. It might not be the right anchor, according to this history hunter fellow. And so it's all gotten rather complicated. And I spend a lot of time trying to unravel all of this.
When you say Odyssey is benefiting from this, explain to us what that means.
Yes.
They are perhaps deriving a little more financial benefit than people might think.
Well, that's the other wrinkle to this increasingly wrinkled story, is that the Odyssey is, if not the only, then one of the only, and I think they certainly were the first treasure hunters ever to be publicly traded, listed on the stock exchange. And what makes it so interesting about them being publicly traded is that when they announce a find like the Sussex with its $4 billion allegedly, or the Black Swan, an allegedly $500 million treasure, the stock does something that's rather predictable. It goes up.
Interesting.
Yes, it will double in the, you know what I mean? Isn't that a surprise?
Isn't that funny?
Yes, it can even rocket upward from $2 to $9.45 in a single day, as it did when the Black Swan was announced last May.
Huh.
You know, one gets curious about the directors who own stock. What do they do when the stock goes so very, very high? And what has tended to happen is that the certain directors have sold, you know, substantial amounts of stock. John Morris selling over $1 million worth of stock after the Black Swan was announced. And when the Black Swan was found, Odyssey said, you know, we can't tell you where it was found. We can't show the treasure to anyone. We can't tell you whose king is on the coins. We can't tell you the date of the coins. But just trust us, we're going to post on our website an independent expert's theory that this could sell for as much as $500 million.
But, I mean, you can't, on Wall Street, you can't just say to Wall Street, oh, by the way, this is how much our stock is worth because we found this treasure that we say is this much money. I mean, the SEC, I imagine, got involved and started looking into this to prove it.
That's the another fascinating part of the story, is that in an earlier incarnation as a company called Seahawk Deep Ocean Technology, Greg Stem and John Morris found Another treasure in the Dry Tortugas near Florida, Florida Keys, that was also trumpeted as, again, in newspapers like the New York Times, in fact, the New York Times and others, as being $800 million. This was back in 1989. And the stock, again, did that predictable thing. It shot up. And in that instance, Greg Stem and John Morris and the company was investigated by the SEC. And
because did they sell their share? Were there indications that
indeed.
Major shareholders were selling then after that announcement?
Absolutely.
Major red flag.
Major red flag. And when some gold bars, when one gold bar was found, they really sold quite aggressively. And that really was a red flag. Now, the company was investigated for several years. And the SEC, you know, put on an aggressive case where they pointed out that the treasure, you know, supposedly valued at $800 million when the stuff that was actually brought up was evaluated by auction experts. It came out to about $1 million. Seahawk said it was about $5 million. But anyway, it was not $800 million. And so, the SEC put on its case. Seahawk put on a strong defense and, in fact, was acquitted. They were found innocent of any wrongdoing. And that's why they were then able to move on and do Odyssey, which they actually had started sometime before.
Can you talk a little bit about the laws that govern these kinds of discoveries?
You know, there were laws that have existed at least since the 70s that gave countries sovereign immunity, which is ownership over their warships.
But Odyssey says finders keepers, essentially.
Yeah, that was always kind of a loose understanding that it was finders keepers. And what would happen ordinarily is the treasure hunter would bring up the treasure. The country that really owned the treasure would make an ownership claim on it, and they would usually pay the treasure hunter a salvage award. They would say, hey, you went to the trouble of getting it. You know, thanks a lot. We get some money back, but we'd like to give you a huge amount. Countries now are starting to want to make claims on what they call their cultural patrimony. You know, it's become a real trend now for countries to say, hey, that stuff in a museum should be returned to our country. It originated with us. And they're feeling the same way about sunken ships of theirs. But I should mention, you asked me about the legal aspects. There's this UNESCO convention from around 2001 that's really been created to thwart treasure hunters. And what it essentially says is that anything older than 100 years old cannot be sold. So that really kind of puts the kibosh on treasure hunters. Because
you're supposed to just surrender it to a historical society?
Or not pick it up at all.
Leave it there.
Just leave it there. That's really the trend now, is countries like Spain are saying, you know, we're content to just leave our wrecks there. And in Odyssey's defense, I mean, Odyssey says that's crazy. I mean, you know, we have the money and the technology to send robots down to meticulously photograph this stuff, to videotape it. You know, you may object to the fact that we want to sell the treasure in order to fund more of this, but, you know, we're doing legitimate recording of the site and so on.
There are some other folks out there who have a different beef with these folks. People who work in museums, people who are really into archaeology, they worry that treasure hunters like the folks at Odyssey, they're not really doing what they should to preserve what they think are very treasured sites, right?
That's a huge part of the debate and controversy about Odyssey and other treasure hunters. Nautical archaeologists believe that these ancient ships should be meticulously studied for what they can tell us about man's seafaring past, man's technological past. Those treasure galleons that were on the seas back in the 1500s, 1600s were, you know, the most advanced technology of the day. They were like the spaceships we send up. And so, you know, the fact that they are down there at such a depth, and thus pretty well preserved, they haven't been got at by light and so on, often well preserved, not always, but often. You know, it's argued by these nautical archaeologists that these things should be meticulously studied. I spoke with the sort of father of the science of nautical archaeology, George Bass, and he at Texas A&M, and he really talked about how ships that he's discovered, he has studied over 30 years. I mean, reconstructing the hull from tiny fragments, glassware being meticulously pieced together a million fragments at a time. This is the kind of meticulous care. Another nautical archaeologist told me that they view them as crime scenes, and they go into them with that kind of just meticulous care. Odyssey,
Doesn't do that?
Well, you know, Odyssey argues that it does respect the sites. Odyssey argues that they always have a an accredited archaeologist on board who is watching and telling the ROV operator, that's the remote control robot operator, to be careful of this or that thing, don't smash this. Odyssey makes these photo mosaics of the sites, thousands of pictures to show where every artifact is, so things are recorded. I should also mention that when they bring up the artifacts, Odyssey has conservation labs where they use electrolysis to remove incrustations from cannons. They preserve the coins properly, usually because they want to sell them, and any scratched coins don't sell as well. But nevertheless, they conserve things properly. So Odyssey would argue and does argue that they take meticulous care that was never taken in the past. An earlier generation of treasure hunters, these kind of swashbuckling, rum-drinking, piratical, hilarious kind of guys would kind of rip the things apart without a care, you know, just get to the gold, you know, and don't even mark where it was. I mean, Odyssey is not doing that by Odyssey's account. And I think, you know, the nautical archaeologists I spoke with that worked with Odyssey said that, you know, a certain amount of care was taken. At the same time, there's no way Odyssey's taking 30 years to excavate things. And Odyssey is not publishing in journals what they find archaeologically of interest. And, you know, one of the guys I spoke with that worked on the wreck that Seahawk found says that the ROV crushed a bunch of ancient Spanish olive jars. Another archaeologist I spoke with that wanted to remain anonymous said that he saw a project plan to sink a shaft through the decks of a ship to get where the gold lay. This would have been after Odyssey took the meticulous photography and so on. But at the end of the day, what Odyssey needs to do is get at whatever is valuable so that they can sell it and thus keep funding the operation.
John Colapinto, thank you so much for coming, and we appreciate it.
My pleasure, Rachel. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Bryant Park Project from NPR News. The BPP is directed by Jacob Gans and edited by Trish McKinney. Our technical director is Manoli Weatherall, ably assisted by Josh Robeson.
Our staff includes Dan Pashman, Ian Chilag, Wynn Rosenfeld, Angela Ellis, Caitlin Kenny, Nathan Duell, and welcome back to Zaina Barakat.
Our interns are Laura Silver, William Hoffman, and Elsa Butler. All three of them are at the NPR Mothership in Washington, D.C. today. We do hope they come back and they don't tell them what we really do up there. Up here.
Laura Conway edits our website and our blog.
Our senior producer is Matt Martinez. Sharon Hoffman is our executive producer.
I'm Rachel Martin.
And I'm Allison Stewart. The Bryant Park Project is online all the time at npr.org/Bryant Park. This is the BPP from NPR News.